name's Kathy. I'm a member of the Thursday branch, the Latrobe branch of Socialist Alternative here in Melbourne. Just wanted to acknowledge that we're having this meeting today on the land of the Wurundjeri people. Stolen land, sovereignty was never ceded, and it always was and always will be Aboriginal land. So today's session is entitled The Revenge of the US Empire, Press Freedom, WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. WikiLeaks has shone a light on some of the worst excesses of US imperialism. I mean, who can forget the video footage of a helicopter of US soldiers killing and shooting Iraqi innocent Iraqi civilians below? Actually, that also included two Iraqi journalists who were at the time working for Reuters, and they were just slain. Thousands of classified images and documents it published exposed in shocking detail the war crimes carried out by the US state abroad. And the arrest of Julian Assange has much wider implications than for him as an individual. His arrest is a worrying development because it represents an attack on the right of journalists. What's at stake here is the principle that we have the right to speak truth to power and not face arrest when we do. And today that principle is in perilous danger. I think there's something very wrong about a society which imprisons people like Chelsea Manning and Julian Assange who tell the truth about wars while doing nothing about those like Tony Blair and George Bush, who took us into an illegal war, costing the lives of over a million Iraqi people and who have never once expressed a minute's regret for that. Our two speakers today, and I'll introduce them as they speak, and starting off today is Kyla Castles. She's a long-term socialist and member of Sydney Socialist Alternative Branch. She's a workplace delegate with the Community Public Sector Union. And I believe her very first political demonstration, was that right? Yeah, was around the Iraq War and the WikiLeaks.
No, in 2003, the first big one was the Iraq War.
Around the Iraq War.
First year of university.
So what we're going to do today is Kyla's going to give a bit of an introduction. Helen Razor, who I'll introduce in a moment, also will give a bit of an introduction that will frame, hopefully, a conversation. And we want to open it up for discussion. So hopefully that is okay for everybody. Welcome Kyla.
Yeah. Can I just say, we don't need a microphone, do we?
No, it's pretty small.
I'm making her do this because, comrades old and new, you had an experience yesterday where you're in a session and there was some adorable baby comrade who was like, Iraq War, explain that to me. Yeah. And because you have, a view of, I'm going to say, we don't know each other real well, but I'm going to say you're big on the old historical materialism.
Yeah.
Bit of a definitely. Fan.
Yeah.
Never know the origins, just know it's important. History's a conversation. Let's start the conversation like all the liberals do. And just, because are there some young people here?
I think there are some young people here. Yeah.
And
definitely
that one. She's not the kind of lady who wants to talk about her first political action because she's dedicated to the struggle. But it can be a useful device, I think, sometimes to go back to a time that you have lived through.
Yeah.
Just as, many Muslim comrades have very much lived through what inevitably led to Christchurch. And so this is the context, and because you were so... Anyway, I'm sorry. So I just want to take responsibility. If you think that this wonderful comrade is, wanting to, I made you say that, and I'm wanting to know. And I'm wanting to know, because, personal narratives are disgusting, and my gut, is just, it convulses. I mean, I actually think there should be a ban, particularly on white midlife women, from talking about, their personal fucking experiences, because I no longer fucking care. But sometimes to put things within a context that we presumably can understand and one that you've experienced is good. So I'll stop apologising.
Ladies and gentlemen, Helen Razor.
You probably have no idea who I am. I used to be respectable. I am no longer... I got chucked out of legacy media mostly for writing about WikiLeaks. Mm. Yeah, that's my story.
Helen's also written.
Oh, no.
all right, we're scrapping that.
Fucking scrapping that movie. Yeah, yeah, fucking whatever. I know a lot of shit. She knows more. And you are a kid to me. But.
I think I'm not a kid to most people in this room.
Look at this baby skin. But you're adorable. But also terrifying, which is great. But can you explain the context in which you were like repelled in the gut and the mind, and you were led to the demonstration against the Iraq War or the invasion of Iraq?
Yeah, totally. I actually think this is a really good question. I was saying to Helen last night when we were speaking that I was in a session yesterday which was about the Iraq War, and I spoke about going to the protests in 2003, which was my first year at university. The protests were before the university started. And then two speakers later, there was someone who spoke from the floor who said that they weren't born when the Iraq War broke out. And so I think actually this is understanding some of this history is actually really quite important, because of the fact that obviously there are, you know, like, a lot of young people at this conference who definitely weren't around politically during the Iraq War, but even during the sort of heady years of 2010 to 2012, when WikiLeaks was sort of, you know, top of the media and stuff, there's heaps of people here who would, you know, maybe barely struggle to remember that. As Helen and Kathy both said, like, my first really big protest that I went to was the Iraq War demonstration, and you know, I think for anyone who lived through that period, like, for me, it was kind of a sort of began my process of political radicalization, because it was just really obvious that this entire war was built on lies and bullshit, and that actually the United States and its allies were going into this country to and would absolutely destroy it and, you know, wreak havoc on the population there, essentially for their own imperialist interests, for, you know, trying to impose themselves on the war, on the world, to reshape the Middle East in their image, and so on. And then the war went ahead, in spite of the fact that there were these huge protests. But the war continued to be quite unpopular throughout, and actually got quite a lot more unpopular as the war went on. And
but this is in particular context. Though, like, let's not forget that the Washington Post and a lot of Australian media—I mean, the headline in the Washington Post. You might remember it from the film *The Post*, in which Daniel Ellsberg is a hero for being a whistleblower. You know, a man who supports Assange irrefutably. So their big editorial is irrefutable. Like, you could see, and so many people could see, that the performance that Colin Powell was coerced into doing, which is like, well, we heard some stuff and here's a PowerPoint demonstration of it. It looked to some of us as though, oh, geez, oh, come on.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But to many people, it didn't. To many people, it was like, oh, well, WMD, oh.
Yeah. Ew. Well, I mean, that's true. And particularly in the United States, I know that support for the war was much higher at the start of the war. But in Australia, the majority of people never actually supported the war. And I think that's really important to remember, which is that even from the outset, that a lot of people were very sceptical about the reasons going in. It was partly that, like, the fucking Colin Powell thing was so transparently bullshit. Like, everyone who saw it could see that they had no idea what
they were. I don't think the Colin Powell's actually slept in 15 years as a result.
Remembering like, all these doings,
I'm so sorry. Yeah. I did a boo-boo on God knows how many people. Whoops, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, but I think the other thing was that, I mean.
Oh, we've driven her away.
I think the other thing is, like, as the war went on, like, it was just so apparent that this was just a brutal, horrible war. And towards the Iraqi people particularly, like Fallujah, and the campaign against Fallujah is something that I will never forget, where they, you know, literally rained down, you know, white phosphorus and Mark 77, which is sort of like napalm, on a civilian population. Like, white phosphorus sticks to human skin and it burns and burns and burns. it's almost impossible to stop burning. People die from multiple organ failure because it poisons their body and all this sort of stuff. And this was just the news, you know. This was being rained down on the civilian population, and this was just a day in, sort of day out kind of barbarity that you started to see in Iraq. And on top of that, there were the sort of increased deaths of soldiers, you know, the number of people who went back in body bags to the United States and Britain and so on.
And it was so intense that, you know, one might say that one began to see with sober senses.
Yes.
Resume, you know, relations with one's kind. And so that even in the context in Australia of the slow burn of Islamophobia, you know, that particular dynamic of fucking racial hatred. So even within that context, even within all of the strategic lies of Tampa, within this, there were very even liberal people like out in the street, and it's so easy for us to forget how recently large numbers of people were mobilized.
Yeah.
And, you know, like my mum, who can be a real asshole most of the time, and, you know, I share her DNA. right? She's like, well, I just, you know, and she fucking voted for Howard, right? You know, oh, come on, everyone did. Your parents too. Oh, they're still thanking Costello for that nice super boost, aren't they? Like, voting at all, fuck it, you know. But I'm sorry. Even my mum was like, well, I'm going to go over there and take those bloody kiddies to school. This is not on. Yeah. And so this is, it's like, okay, so even people who have suspicion of Islam, even people, you know, it was just like people were.
Yeah.
Included, and this was your particular, you know, consciousness event. It's when you truly became a woman and a comrade. it was your intellectual menarche, if you will.
Yeah, totally.
But these are, I mean, obviously you're a brilliant person and would have always been brilliant. But this was, and this is why I, you know, want to talk, you know, I thought that was a good departure point because it was a departure point for so many.
Yeah.
And, it was intense, the amount of, like, hostility toward this action, even by people who are racist, even by my mom. And it was just like, oh, come on, you know.
Yeah. And I think one of the things about it is that, like, it does this process where people start questioning things that the powers that be sort of say about, you know, the world in general and how things operate and so on, because the lies are just so transparent. It's just, you know, everyone knew this was not about weapons of mass destruction. Everyone, and towards the end, they started talking about more openly about regime change, which in some ways is what it was partly more about, you know, making the regime more pliant to US interests and so on. But, like, nonetheless, like, the fact that people could see that it was all sort of crap, I think, started to open people up to sort of other, you know, ways in which, you know, a lot of what they said was crap. Like, we were talking yesterday about the GFC, which happened in 2008, which...
Yeah, 2007, 2008.
Yeah, yeah.
Which had such an impact on the lives of so many Americans and so many kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, brought us 4chan.
Yeah.
But also brought us Anonymous. Yeah. And, you know, brought us the seeds of the, you know, the alt-right and, you know, the people in basements, the deplorables, if you will. This is the context in which so many people are living.
Yeah.
And I mean, let's not sort of like forget like the extreme your impact on comrades of color, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So they're being targeted in this kind of like, you know, credit boom, like what do you call it? Fictitious capital.
Yeah.
You know, double entry, fucking. Bookkeeping, suddenly people of colour are targeted to, you know, would you like a house? Oh, no one's ever offered to lend me money before.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden, homeless, homeless black people, homeless Hispanic. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's fucking crazy shit.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy shit. And, you know, mate, Barat, what a inspiration.
Mm, total inspiration. You know, trillions of dollars to the bank.
Yeah.
Real gem.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and so it all continues. The same foreign policy continues. The same, suck up.
Yeah.
Economics continue. So things are pretty shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's say.
But that stuff, like, is important because it, like, people can just see, you know, that they're getting done over. It's like all those people who lost their homes, like the first-time homeowners, first-time whatever, who had been sucked into this, basically big rot where the banks had planned all along to take their houses off them, essentially. Like, you know, people started to see that all of the things that are going on are just, like, it's all just a web of lies. It's all just deception. It's all just about, you know, setting up a system where, you know, people get to make money out of this, you know, like, it's all about the rule of the rich and the powerful and what interests them. And I think that during those years, that became really, really obvious.
Yeah, and not necessarily do people have a theoretical framework to understand all of this, but they're feeling like things are shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, there's erudite comrades here such as yourself who, are not new to activism. It's like, you know, you can have this thing, oh, it's nothing new. You know, there's always crises. But I think even it doesn't matter how sort of refined one's consciousness, how understood activism is, all the theoretical framework, there's not any Western person who does not feel in the moment, including, I would say, ourselves, that we're not approaching some kind of hard limit. And whether that is, your primary concern is, well, you know, imperial liberalism, of course, it's the factory that produces fascism. But you feel it in your gut, right? Like, you do. Would I be right? Like, you're all feeling in your gut right now, fuck me, something's really up. It's not. It's a time in history, right? It's a time between times. The morbid symptoms appear, and everyone's feeling that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm sure that there's people who have felt or observed that in other places or other struggles. But we are fucked, right? Like, we are so fucked.
Yeah.
It's not good. I mean, I'm sure the accelerationists are enjoying it. This is about the only room that would get a laugh. I love you guys.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm putting you off, but you remember. Like, I mean, it's, you know, there's a whole lot of shit going on. And there's a whole lot of shit going on.
And I think the thing is like, so, and you see that kind of around the Occupy stuff, which is
2011.
Where there's huge protests that start in the United States and then they sort of spread around a lot of the Western world, you know, and that kind of really simple but effective, I think, slogan, which is such a encapsulation. It's like, we are the 99%, they are the 1%, which is just, like, whatever, you know, the percentages might be a bit off, but it's more the thing of, like, you know, there is us and there is them and we have kind of counterposed interests. And I think that's important because it happens at the time that some of the most famous WikiLeaks leaks are published. So, like, the Afghan war diaries and the Iraq war logs are both published in 2010, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, WikiLeaks has been publishing since, you know, 2006, but it's kind of like a marginal interest. And it's just, you know, I mean, people can be so cynical, including ourselves at times, which is just like, well, I know, but still, you know, I mean, my God, I watched the Jordan Peterson debate last night, so Zizek's in my head.
Oh, that's
Have you fucking seen that? No, that's a whole other.
Save yourselves.
Did you watch it too?
I've seen.
Oh, God, it's just like, it's for a Marxist, it's like pornography. It's like, he read the first page of the Communist Manifesto Oh my God. Anyway, didn't get it either.
No.
Like, no point in arguing with him, as I would have liked to have told Slavoj before. But so there's that, you know, Lacanian Marxist thing where it's like, I know, but still, you know, like, and there's some value in accepting that idea. Like, I know that they do terrible things, but still, of course, I have to live. But particularly the collateral murder video, which I'm sure you've all seen, right? Or not seen because you didn't want to send yourself mad, right? Like, it's different. It's not just, I know, but still. It's like, no, fucking no.
There's like that one point in the video where a van stops to sort of render assistance, pick up bodies, and they shoot him, the driver, from the helicopter. And one of them laughs and says, ha, you know, like, look at those dead bastards. And I think that that really, really encapsulates the sort of cold, calculating, brutal occupation in Iraq.
You know, and the alienation that, you know, you have to evacuate yourself of your last human shred to do that kind of work, right? And it's like, I mean, the liberal response might be, oh, well, they're just bad people, and if they were just more compassionate, well, I mean, but, you know, you have to, there is nothing left of your compassion. It's how are you going to kill people unless you have that idea. Absolutely.
And that's sort of like, that's all in the Iraq war logs, I think. Like, it's sort of, one of the things about them is that they paint this picture of just, this is, you know, routine brutality. This is just what happens on a day-to-day basis in Iraq. That in the process of, like, occupation and trying to reshape the Middle East in the interest of the United States, that this involves people completely dehumanizing the Iraqi people, like the occupiers dehumanizing the Iraqi people. And so the war logs are just this, you know, it's a litany of abuses. It's the fact that every, you know, basically every civilian man of fighting age was categorized as an enemy combatant when they killed them. You know, this kind of, these horrors, you know, the fact that they shot resistors who were clearly trying to surrender. You know, all this kind of stuff is just, you know, it's just...
And it's, you know, like, whatever, again, your theoretical framework, you feel it in your gut.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, the other thing to sort of, like, place it back within an explicitly Marxist framework is that, you know, well, historical materialism has scientific qualities... as it has been explained, but I mean, it's also very explicitly said that one, you know, cannot know the reasons for something occurring, like the idea and the material they interweave. And the Iraq War, in particular, is a moment of military crisis because the propaganda, as you've already said, was not very good. And the reason that it was not very good is because, you know, no international relations theorist can fully explain why that invasion happened. Like, was it, you know, just the sort of, like, you know, ongoing dominance of the United States? Was it Halliburton? Was it oil? Was it just that, you know, some kind of, like, you know, Oedipal Avenger that that GW was being for daddy? Was it Sam Huntington's Clash of Civilizations? Yes, 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 no one knows.
Yeah.
And because there was all of these little kind of, like, it was never justified because it couldn't be. No one knew why it was being done.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think there was always a bit of scepticism around it, like huge amounts of scepticism, actually.
And to see that cynicism in that video for, you know, like, a state actor not even being sure about why it was doing this thing. Comrade Kuhn may disagree at some point. You may have a different idea about this, but I do not believe that there can be a single, like, bullshit justification for that particular invasion, right? It was like almost, who fucking knows? They don't, even the people that did it. And so you can see this in the video. I think you can see things falling apart.
Yeah.
I mean, we know, you know, you can explain it simply or in many, many ways. And it's not only that you see these people turning into sort of bots, but like the people doing the killing, but they thought that it was okay to record it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Why would you not, why would somebody at some point not think, fuck, this can't ever be seen. This is, you know, like...
destroy it. Like, make it go away.
Like, totally yeah. Godwin it. Like, you know, mm. like, totally Godwin it. One of the horrors that people felt about the death camps was the Nazis took pictures, the Nazis documented this. They had, like, even at the elite level, they had no response. Okay. Yeah, it's like you can take, it's a snuff film.
Yeah.
And it's okay to keep a snuff film. And that's the context in which we saw it because it's their snuff film. And I think apart from the content, it's the framing. You know, like, and I feel that Chelsea Manning did, the alleged leaker, there's no evidence, did what a billion Noam Chomskys could not do. This is framed, this is framed, this is framed. There is no way that you... So you know how people will be like, oh, I saw that on telly, so it must be the truth. Rule of law, rule of law. There is no way you could have seen that and not known how it was framed.
Yeah.
So it's like internal propaganda almost. Like, this is how they talk to each other. And I think for, like, I'm sounding a bit kind of like postmodern, but the framing is how you see it.
Yeah.
This is an internal communications. It cannot be understood by any person who sees it in any other way.
Yeah.
And this is the propaganda that they give to themselves. And it was important, let's say.
Yeah. I think, I mean, I'll let Comrade Kuhn maybe respond from the floor later about imperialism. I think there is an explanation for the war in Iraq, but I do agree with
many.
I think that the one of the key things is, like, you know, this is just part of a litany of abuses, and it's part of that process that when you're justifying an occupation, you have to kind of justify the brutality to yourself as an occupier that you're imposing on these people.
Oh.
You know, like, and how do you do that? By just treating them as things that you can shoot, like they're like targets, like they're sport. But also, I think there's a kind of contradictory thing as well, because actually, when you look at some of the other thing, like the other things that were in the leagues, they also indicate that they kind of knew that, you know, they had to try and cover up what they were doing. It's like there's this one story from the Afghan war diaries where a group of Marines are sort of spooked by a nearby suicide bombing. And they race off down a highway, I think it's about 6 miles, and they just shoot indiscriminately as they go. And they shoot, you know, teenage girls working in fields. They shoot people in oncoming vehicles. They shoot old men walking down the road. They kill something like 14 people and they wound huge numbers. And then when they write up the official report, they mention none of it. They don't, and so they sort of know that, like, there's a contradictory thing where, like, on the one hand, you have this absolute dehumanization of people that means that they can do this, and in some circumstances they do record it, and then in others they know that they have to hush it up and, you know, keep it hidden because they don't want people to know what is going on in these places.
So. I mean, this was, you know, but this is not the only release by WikiLeaks, course, but this is the release that, you know, I mean, it's not a, you know, great hacker of history story. It's not a great journalist of history story, but this is a moment. And I don't stand with Assange because of the greatness of that moment, but to understand it within the context of your life, what conversations, what understandings that made possible, it being such a big and an ongoing war on Islam itself, because it did get very just like plain old racist as well. 25 years since Sam Huntington wrote that fucking piece of shit.
Yeah.
Like, he's just like the Clash of Civilizations, which was very influential, we can't have Muslims in the world because they're just not compatible.
Mm.
And basically, I mean, you know, sorry, you know, to the, you know, our comrade here from ASIO, like, you may not have that understanding. It is a piece of racist shit and I fucking read it, right? And I didn't want to, but you've got to sometimes. But this is also, you know, the blankness of order. They do believe this shit. They do start to believe this shit as well. But so this is a very big event. This is not why I will fucking stand with those. It's not just because they changed the world. But nor is it just because this is an assault on journalism, because as far as I'm concerned, journalism can get fucked.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what the fuck has journalism ever done for me? I don't even have super. What's it ever done for you? I mean, it gave Marx a little bit of extra money, but so that's good. But so it's not just about journalism. We don't have to, in this context, have that conversation. I could go through with you all of the other releases by WikiLeaks, how they've been used in individual struggles. I could give you a justification for the Podesta files. I do think that they're a very important document. They do not frame the event so powerfully as collateral murder did, but, you know, you can go ha, ha, ha at the Podesta files, but there is a very good rationale for publishing these things. Again, you know, we need to remind each other, everyone, that WikiLeaks does not just info dump on the internet, right? I mean, in an age where fucking listicles on BuzzFeed are journalism, whatever. Like, I mean, and listicles now in the New York Times, their most popular journalism is doing listicles. The New York Times editor actually does dare to stand with WikiLeaks because they know they're fucked. You know, first they came for the people that Peter Grester didn't like, and then they came for the New York Times. But so there's so many releases of, you know, not of such kind of like impact, but also internal communications, such as, you know, the Haiti disaster, which America did so much for, to make it really, really bad and absolutely nothing to, you know, assist. I mean, for me, there's a lot of moments which I would, you know, you don't have to go to fucking WikiLeaks, right? You just like, but there's a lot of shit there. And, you know, when you read that the ambassador in Port-au-Prince, capital of Haiti, right, the US ambassador, you know, writes to the cable to the State Department, while people are still dying, you know, the whatever natural disaster it was. What was it? Earthquake, tsunami, whatever. It was like Haiti's been an ongoing disaster since, you know, the US is, since 1805, right? And the ambassador writes to the State Department, the gold rush is on, right? The gold rush is on. This is like, you know, the, hey, Halliburton, you know, it's like we didn't even have to, like, actually shoot these people.
We're open for business.
But, and so to see how power talks to itself and you know, there are so many incidents where, you know, people in particular struggles where people in legal cases, workers have used stuff that is on WikiLeaks, which, again, is curated, you know, and is volunteer labour, has been very, very powerful in individual struggles, in individual cases, and it's I don't even want to have the conversation about, like, journalism, because it's like, you know, it's like the concept of equality. Who wants fucking equality, right? Mm-hmm. Like, journalism isn't a standard. But so this is, anyway, go back to what you're saying.
Well, I do know Kathy wants to open, sort of give people a bit more of an opportunity to, to speak from the floor. But just before we do, one thing that I wanted to say is that, like, I think this is really actually, like, this is kind of crucial in actually understanding, like, why they went after Assange and why they did it in such a ferocious way. Like, people probably, the younger people in the room probably don't have much of a memory of this, but it was like, there was this period where it was intense, where they went after Assange. Assange. Oh, my God. There were, you know, politicians around the world, including in Australia, you know, calling for him to be arrested, to be indicted. They gathered a grand jury to put together an indictment. Sarah Palin, like, people young people probably don't remember her, but she was kind of like a mini Trump, essentially. She was a pretty foul, detestable human being. She called for his assassination at one point. So this was a pretty frenzied and rabid attack on Assange.
Gillard had one or two things to say.
Yes, she sure did.
Thanks, Julia. You were a great leader.
And that's the other thing, is that, like, you know, it comes from the sort of more liberal and social democratic parties as well. So it's the Democrats in the United States and it's the Labor Party here who go on about it. But, like, the reason that this happened, I think, is because actually understanding that, well, they were revealing the secrets that the rich and the powerful did not want people to see. They did not want them to see the blood on their perfectly manicured hands. They did not want them to know these secrets, you know. And it's Helen's right, like, it's about a range of things, like the Icelandic banking sector and all this kind of stuff. There's just a wide range of stuff that WikiLeaks puts out into the public domain, which is about just exposing all the crap and the cynicism that goes behind, like, the ideology that we're fed about why they do things and all this kind of stuff. And so it's actually like, you know, when you reveal those secrets, you become a target. And that's why they went after Assange. That's why they went after Snowden, after Chelsea Manning. And in a variety of ways, it's like there's this general repression and, you know, clamping down on whistleblowers and people who speak the truth, you know, then and now today. It's like, well, if you're a doctor on Manus Island or Nauru, you can't speak about what you see there publicly. You can't speak about the abuse of children, you know? I work for the federal government. Public servants can't speak about shit. We are not allowed to have any opinions about any government policies.
Do you know what, though? Like, if it were the good ones that they like, you could talk about it till blue in the face. I mean, you know, Plibersek the other day herself, you know, despite, I'm sure that the ALP has a very strict social media policy, except when it comes to, you know, if you say shit things about Assange, retweet any conspiracy theorist you want. I have worked for the ABC, a member of your... Do you work there too?
No, I don't work there. I work for another...
What a shit of a place. right, so you got social media policy coming out your ear holes. Still, Sally Neighbor, the executive producer of Four Corners, as I have been reminding her every day for the last several weeks, retweeted after that fucking hand job they gave Clinton. Oh, my God. I mean, Jesus. Sarah Ferguson. Anyway, so the EP of Four Corners retweets, Julian Assange is Putin's bitch, right?
Wow. Look,
I've got screenshots if you would like to share them with your friends. or ask your friends to send them back to everyone at the ABC. So how is this acceptable? So, yeah, just sort of...
Yeah,
picking up
totally.
Your point. If you're against Assange, absolutely okay. Because rule of law, rape, sexism, and then, you know, but I don't want to talk about Chelsea Manning because, oh, she seems like a nice person that I should like.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, definitely.
Fuck me.
Well, on that...